Welcome to Compliance Pointers, where we take an in-depth look into the latest news, trends, and challenges surrounding information security, privacy, and marketing compliance. Let's dive in with your host, Jordan Eisner.
All right, welcome back. Another episode of Compliance Pointers. I'm joined by Chris Abacon today, aka Bacon.
That's right.
Call him around here. Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Jordan. How are you doing?
Good. It's been a little while since
yeah. Yeah, it's been the CMMC, right? This is back maybe sometime last year, I think.
Yeah. CMMC, never heard of it.
Yeah, right.
Nothing new with that, right?
Yeah, right. There's
no pressing.
What's going on? Yeah.
November dates or anything.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, people have to get, you know, their programs and things like right. that going. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
A lot of things going on CMMC.
When you've done a podcast with us in the past, has it been video or just audio?
It's been video. Absolutely. Okay. It's been video.
All right. All right. So it hasn't been that long.
Yeah.
It hasn't been that long. It's been within a year.
But I remember video each time because I remember I got this specific mic for, you know, with a podcast I did with my friend, right? You guys seen my page. But, you know, I remember always having it when I'm on these podcasts, and it's awesome.
It's good. It's legit.
Yes, indeed.
So for those of you who don't know, Chris has been with Compliance Point. Remind me your official title. Are you
senior security consultant? Yeah,
senior security consultant.
As beginning of the year,
about 2 years now, or
a little more? Bit over 2 years. Yeah, I joined Compliance Point late July 2023. So 2 years and a few months.
Okay,
it's gone gotcha. By. Yeah. It's been a great time. I'm telling you,
that's good tenure too. Constant. You military guys move around a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. You're used to that. I guess that makes sense.
It's either every 3 or 4 years, depending on, you know, where you worked, right? But yeah. 3 years seems to be kind of the standard, right?
So judging by that, you must have moved maybe about 4 times because we were just talking, you were in the Navy for 11 years.
Yeah, 4 times.
Four times?
Okay. Yeah, it's Virginia, Florida. So.
Yeah. And you've been in IT and information security. You know, you put in your profile, blue team, probably no red team.
Yeah, so I was on a blue team. I was the opposite side of the cool guys, network defense, right? Analysts, yeah. we'd get the telemetry from the ships and things like that and do analysis on it back at home base, right? In simpler terms. Sure. But the red team guys were doing all the cool stuff, right?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I'm sure you're not being entirely forthcoming with everything you did. So, a good guest. As he alluded to a little bit earlier, we were hinting around or joking about CMMC, but an expert in CMMC, NIST, general cybersecurity, information security, but especially these government frameworks and government regulations. So today, we're talking about government or. I got NIST, a lot of times yes. associated with that, but the NIST RMF framework, which is focused on AI or NIST answer to AI, right?
Mm-hmm, right. So it's the NIST AI RMF framework this time. AI RMF framework. NIST, as for listeners, right, falls under Department of Commerce, right? They do a lot of the research on behalf of the government. They get all the request for information from separate entities within the government. And then they do a ton of research, a lot of smart people, right? At NIST, PhDs, whatnot, right? That do everything. So they're a very valuable resource to lean on.
It's a great standard. It's free, right?
To access. Absolutely.
We like it a lot here at Compliance Point when organizations come to us. Well, I'm speaking broader about NIST right now, just as an organization. But when they come to us and they need a risk assessment or framework and they're not being held to a certain standard or framework by an external party, we recommend NIST. Free to access it, to build a program off. We really see, especially the cybersecurity framework, as a cornerstone framework. But this is their answer to AI, similar to ISO 42001 mm-hmm. or HITRUST AI cybersecurity framework. I'd say similar to, you might prove me wrong in this podcast, and you might speak to some of the differences, but that's what we're going to be discussing today. So start us out with an overview. NIST,
right.
AI, RMF,
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the NIST AI RMF, AI Risk Management Framework, essentially a framework that's designed to help organizations across various, all industries actually, to identify and manage risks associated with AI. Now, in the actual framework documentation itself, AI didn't define AI, right? AI is very broad, and they didn't want to take that problem, right? They didn't want that on their hands, right? But what they did instead is they defined AI systems. So basically, anything that generates outputs or such as predictions, recommendations, and any decisions that could influence any real or virtual environment with various levels of autonomy, right? But what's nice about NIST is they also defined risk, right? So NIST, in this sense, is the composite measure of an event's probability of occurring and the magnitude or degree of the consequence of that corresponding event, right? So these impacts could be either positive, negative, or both, and they, you know, as a result, can be, you know, opportunities or threats, right? So, and then the NIST framework itself, though, this specific framework is really all about developing and deploying trustworthy AI systems. I'll be continuing to say trust throughout this podcast, because trust is essentially what this is all about. The big characteristics they've identified are that the systems, right, these AI systems are valid and reliable, right, meaning that it's performing the way it's advertised and expected. The system is safe, right? It doesn't endanger life, health, property, environment, right? So again, this is a very broad framework. So when you're talking about safety of a system, you can talk about anything. Like it could be something with healthcare. It could be something, an AI product that could be utilized in the public sector that can determine the traffic flows, right? So that could be public safety. So you got to think about not just maybe to your organization, but as a whole, NIST defined it, right? These risks across organizations, throughout the industries, right?
So you might be answering already a follow-up question. It sounds like you got more to add on the basics of it, but...
Oh, yeah.
I was going to ask when a company or an organization might think to engage or to apply this framework. Mm-hmm. So maybe get into that, but it sounds like you pretty much said anytime they're going to be leveraging some sort of AI system, no matter the company or the type. There's not a specific that it's broad.
Right, absolutely. So I'll dive into that later on. But again, this is a framework, right? And it's really a voluntary framework based on NIST's best practices and, the tons of research they do. And consider that, I know I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but there are some, there are functions and outcomes and subcategories that I'll talk about later, but you tailor these subcategories to your organization, right? If you're a developer of AI, you're going to have a totally different control set or risk-based control set compared to somebody that's a user or end user, right? So again, that's all part of, the security and resiliency with this AI. Kind of moving on to the next topic with the trustworthiness is it's got to be explainable, right? So the users have to understand how the system operates at a high level. Now, I understand this is a huge undertaking for non-technical folks, right? Understanding inferencing, understanding labels, and all that stuff, not necessarily going to be daily business talk throughout organizations, right? But at least understand, I would say, where data goes, where your data flows are, right? Where you're uploading where is data, right? Or where is AI within your organization? You got to be these organizations that provide these services, you have to be able to explain it, right? So that's a kind of a whole rabbit hole, right? When you think about it. But that said, there are assurances that these organizations, all the big AI organizations out there need to be able to explain what they do with your data, which then turns into, the next part, which is privacy, right? System user privacy, as in if you're querying AI, if you're utilizing AI for some type of, intellectual property work or whatever it might be, you got to be able to, the system itself, the AI system's got to protect your privacy. And then lastly, big one is it's got to account for bias and discrimination, right? And, this is a big topic within the AI field because NIST itself is actually currently drafting a definition of this bias, right? in NIST SP 1270, right? It's currently in its draft. So SP 1270, if you Google that, there's a big draft on it. It's got a whole listing on all these types of biases that could happen when you're utilizing AI, right? So, and I've just pulled up here real quick. It does have also the ISO definition of bias is the degree to which a reference value deviates from the truth. So that's a very broad statement, but that's exactly what it is. It's very broad, right? You've got many forms of AI and many forms of bias when it comes to AI. So let's take an example for activity, right? We wear our, you know, if you work out, you got your smartwatch, let's say you're wearing it throughout the day and maybe you're utilizing it for health reasons, right? You want some health metrics or something, you want some AI to give you some data points based on your health, right? But that means that you've got to be wearing your AI, your wristwatch all the time, like when you're sleeping, when you're showering, whatever. It's not going to be complete data, right? Because at the core, you're not going to have a full picture of, you know, your heart rate, your health metrics or stuff like that. So bias means that it could be skewed a certain way, right? So if you're only wearing it when you're working out, right, depending on the type of model, it's going to be like, oh, Jordan works out all the time. He only wears it when he's wearing his watch, yeah. Right?
Or he needs to get his heart checked out because
exactly.
That's a high heart rate all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's also considered something called like sampling bias, right, or reporting bias. So let's say you're doing a health study, you know, across, you know, the population of the United States, which is very diverse, right? But your health metrics could be skewed based on reporting. Certain demographics don't necessarily have the reporting numbers from a sample size perspective that other demographics do. So they could, an AI could potentially suggest, oh, this demographic has less risk of heart disease and diabetes, when in actuality it's just that, so perhaps that this demographic doesn't trust as much to go to the doctor or things like that, right? So bias itself can be, it's a massive topic, right? And it's really at the core of the trust with AI. And when you think about it from a business perspective, these biases can be, they can be misleading perhaps as well. From, let's say, if you're a product person, right? A product person could get incorrect biased data and output from an AI, and then completely disrupt their strategy from a marketing perspective moving forward, right? So there's all sorts of things that can go on with it. Again, it's all about trust, right? Trust is everything.
Yeah. Okay. Moving along, because I think each one of these things you could do sections and sections and sections.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, every conference you go to these days, workshop, whatever, there's AI tracks. But so with it being NIST, there's a similar core function group. Ernie, you're going to talk about that. I have it written down. Govern, map, measure, manage. Other than the obvious of those, anything else you would add with those functions?
Yeah, so those are really, I mean, those are the core functions, right? So CSF has its own functions, identify, protect, right?
Right.
So it's kind of modeled after that. So I think what's nice about this framework is that they made it easy for us, right? It's map, or really, govern is at the center, right? If you think about it in like a circle, govern is at the center. It's like the governance of the AI. And you've got map, measure, and manage surrounding it, right? So you've got like a big circle. So consider that kind of the framework, and they all work together. There's all these cross-functional, there's all these cross-functional dependencies as such, right? But let's just talk about each of them specifically. We've got govern, right? Which is the fostering of risk culture, right? Throughout an organization and identifying those risks at the high level of an organization, right? So you've got your executive board, right? They're less concerned about technology, but more about organizational governance, right? So again, critical to building trust and then also empowering the employees of that organization to manage that specific risk based on a broad set of perspective. Right? That moves us onto map, which is obviously these all work together. Mapping, right, is a function that concentrates on managing risk and at every phase of the AI lifecycle, right? So assessing the risks and, you know, to potential stakeholders and end users, and operationalizing the socio technical approaches, like establishing those contextual factors with risk, and really understanding that is really based on the organization. Everybody's organization is different from a risk perspective, and deploying AI in that sense can, you know, can definitely skew and create some difficulties being able to map that. That's why it's important to understand where your AI usage and use cases are. And then next, you've got measure, right? Which is the development of, you know, quantitative and qualitative methods to assess AI risks. So NIST describes it as repeatable and scalable test evaluations and validation verification measures. They call it TEV in the document. They defined risk, right? But we want to measure them based on the trustworthiness criteria I mentioned previously, right? So really, there's quantitative, where you can tie a number to something, right? You can talk about loss impacts or the total value of a building, perhaps, right? You calculated your loss expectancy. But then you could also have the qualitative, where you've got like a low, medium, high, very high, right? So a lot of organizations have to choose, or generally I would recommend a combination of both, right? Holistically from a company, right? But that's where the measures are. And then you've got manage, where it's the actual operators, which focuses on the resources dedicated to mitigating and the identified risks. So it's essentially the control implementation, right? Risk prioritization, treatment, response, involving data management, decommissioning mechanisms like a kill switch, you know, incident response, monitoring, compliance, and insurance, right? For identification, making sure you get some money back, right? And then essentially, this is the operational management involved in AI. So that's kind of the four levels explained at the high level.
Okay. And maybe a tough question if you're not super familiar with 42001, but that's the other one that I've seen out there gaining a lot of traction. Mm-hmm. There's high trust, and for whatever reason, just seems to be tied to companies already doing high trust. So somebody exploring this, right, for the first time, I hear about NIST and I hear about ISO 42001. Have you looked at that? Do you have notes on a comparison between the two? What's different?
Yeah, absolutely. So the big difference between them is that for NIST, the NIST framework itself is voluntary, and it's a non-certifiable guideline, right? It's a US-based guideline, versus ISO 47001, is an international certifiable standard, right, to establish something called the AIMS, or AI management system, yeah, which really focuses on like structured governance, risk management, compliance, similar to ISO 27001, but it has a focus on transparency and accountability, specifically with external audits. That's the big one, external audits to ensure compliance, right? AI RMF is more adaptable. You don't, like I said, you don't have to pick every guide, right? You look at the categories and subcategories, see where they apply to you, and you as an organization can decide to implement that if you need to, if you want to. Mm. But they can be very valuable, right? Depending on where you position yourself in the market. That said, right, it takes that risk-centric approach, right? Big one, yeah. Risk-centric approach versus ISO 42001 takes that prescriptive, auditable management system, right? So it also obviously aligns globally, right, for a formal verification process, right? Right now, there's no real crosswalk between the two, but I can definitely foresee in the future where organizations would align to both, and you know, it just presents yourself more in a technology-forward fashion as an organization. Right.
Well, my understanding is, right, ISO is auditing, you know, it's meeting you where you are in terms of your AI program and how you're going to manage it, and how you're going to govern that, mm-hmm, as an organization moving forward, how you're going to meet on it, how you're going to, you know, assess risk against it. It's not as prescriptive as NIST AI RMF, which is going to have specific controls and functions and things to abide by. So if you're aligning with NIST AI RMF, and it looks like you got some thoughts on it.
Yeah.
Perhaps aligning with that, and then you build your 42001 certification based on that, and your management of your AIMS based, yeah, on RMF controls.
Yeah, absolutely. There's many ways to, as they say, many ways to skin the cat in this regard. You know, like again, I think if you do not have, you know, a strict adherence or requirement for ISO 47001, then AIRMF is a great option to consider, especially because you've got like a way to tailor your outcomes and controls, right? And again, these controls actually, there's no official mappings just yet, but there are applicable controls on 853 that can, NIST 853 that can apply to the AIRMF, right? It's yeah, all based on the
Agree. I think from a business standpoint, because you're right, if nobody's asking you to get certified, and it's 42,001, you keep saying 47, but understandably, ISO 27,000. There's so many numbers with ISO.
Yeah, there's so many numbers. I keep saying 2701 because that's when I know, right?
Yeah, that's a good one too. But so with 42,001, you know, it's a way to show an international organization certified. But I agree, if you're, and I'm going to ask you about this too, so this is a good segue to the next question. If you're on the fence, there's no external pressures, you want to ensure you're solving for risk around AI or AI systems, then absolutely take a look at this AIRMF, because you're not committing to a program like you are with ISO, where you're going to have, you know, certification audit every 3 years, surveillance audits in between, building a whole management program. I'm not saying any of that's bad, but it's like anything else. Bigger house, another car, you know, more things you have, more to maintain, more to upkeep, more work. So it's maybe good to dip your toe in. So that's a good question. If you're on the fence about it and whether or not you need to implement something like NIST AIRMF, what are some factors you should consider?
Yeah, I definitely, one of the first things to consider is if you're, you know, a European company, if the AI Act applies to you, EU AI Act, right? Now it's not mandatory to do NIST CSF, but these, NIST AIRMF, but the standards can help you comply with that business law, right? Sure. It's that natural step towards that certification step for 40,001.
And establishing best practices and repeatable practices.
Repeatable, right? And I think specifically on the measure and manage sections, those two, right? While there's no formal mapping, those two will likely map very well to the 42,001 when you look at those subcategories. Now, an additional factor is, are your customers asking about your AI use, right, and safeguards? Right, a lot of these modern tech companies are integrating AI into their processes, procedures, and products, right, to be able to effectively position themselves better in the market, right, for these organizations. Now, these companies are, now the customers are asking, hey, how are you protecting my organization? How are you protecting my data, right? In this regard, right, if you as an organization choose to utilize AIRMF, you can really weigh out the advantages of incorporating the trustworthiness, right, of AIRMF, and see how it can increase your confidence in the marketplace, right? For, you know, within your direct market space, right? You can position yourself more competitively. And I think that's a real value from a business standpoint. Why, you know, if you're not, if this is, you know, mandatory, take it to the next level. You know, AIRMF can definitely assist in that.
Yeah, can sleep better at night.
Yeah, exactly. And then lastly, right, like how is your, consider what level of AI use that you have currently, right? How are you using it? Are you ad hoc? Are you just using free accounts on, you know, ChatGPT, you know, Claude, whatever you might be using? Or do you have a fully formed Azure or AWS instance that focuses on training models, right? You've got your own models, right? So what are your expectations for that? Definitely consider, if you're more on the technical end, right, some of these trustworthiness factors and how they can help your organization, right? So those are, I would say, big factors.
And so if you need to do it, how do you get started?
Let's see here. I would get started, right, with the top, the governance, right? So for businesses, right, I'd recommend establishing roles and responsibilities. Like if you've got the resources, create an oversight group, a group with a senior stakeholder, an executive sponsor that can help lead the charge for AIRMF, right? Again, like anything, if you don't have executive sponsorship for any venture or project, you're not going to be able to implement that within your organization, right? So if you're listening to this and, you know, you're at that, you know, mid-senior level, definitely get a executive sponsor on board to help and assign those, that clear ownership of the AI RMF in those functions to each of those people, right? Next is that I would identify and classify the types of AI systems that your organization uses, right? Are they in production? Are you a technical company, right? Or maybe those AI platforms that are embedded in vendor products, right? The AI RMF actually defines various stages of the AI life cycle in its text, right? So from data design, creation of AI models, all the way to the end users, right? So I would consider classifying all those applicable to your business and how it's used currently, right? Make sure you get an honest, truthful version of it, because you never know if there's the shadow AI or shadow IT, right? You've got probably heard of that. There's probably users out there maybe using AI, you know, potentially not within compliance, right? Oh, so yeah. That's why the governance aspect, definitely. More than probably, right? So that's why governance is really a key factor. Next, again, more high-level stuff is defining risk appetite and principles, right? Being able to document organizational tolerance. This is going to be done at the executive layer, right? Risk tolerance, it's going to be set by the specific business process owners and the executives in charge, right? So it's going to have to be, there's going to have to be discussions on that. Identify where the harm could be in data handling, you know, outputs and in misuse. Next is I would, you know, define risk metrics. What's the risk to my organization? Do I have a risk register, right? I'm sure many mature organizations out there that are risk-centric, they've got their risk registers and they've quantified and they've categorized anything that could happen to, you know, their manufacturing center, right? But in this case, you want to be able to do the same thing with AI. Where is it in your system? You know, having that discussion with your senior leadership, your CISOs, and your frontline, you know, information security managers, having that discussion with them and, you know, having those working groups and making sure that you've got those risks defined. Then lastly, you've got implementation, right? This is definitely more on the manage side of the framework itself. Implementation of risk controls. Each of these controls are going to be dedicated to each specific risk, right? So specific triggers and bias mitigation techniques. And I mean, even like a human review process, right? These little things can be controls that can be very helpful and really critical to ensuring the trustworthiness of your AI systems to match each control to the specific identified risk, right? So those kind of at a high level, those are my general recommendations for a business to be able to implement AI RMF.
No, that's helpful. I was thinking more so like talk to an expert.
Yeah, right? You talk to us.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's a good wrapping point then. So. No, Chris, I think we got even deeper than we expected to.
Yeah,
on this. Definitely. You know, for our listeners, there's just a lot. There's a lot to unwrap. There's a lot of uncertainty. There's still a lot of people figuring out. And we start bringing up things like bias and you know, transparency and how to do that with things that are changing every single day. It's challenging. So, you know, if you're an organization on the fence about this, if you're an organization doing business in Europe, if you're an organization getting external pressures to have a program around AI, please don't hesitate to reach out. So you can connect with us at connect@compliancepoint.com. Chris is active on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn. Feel free to message us there. Yeah, just did the website. Plenty of content we've been putting out about this and other things. And continue to subscribe and listen.
Awesome.
Chris, thanks again. We'll do it another time.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Jordan.
Yep. Thanks, everybody. Be well.
All right. Bye.